business owners likely will have only one shot to sell a business. Most don't understand what drives value and how buyers look at a business. Until now. Welcome to the How to Sell a Business podcast, where every week we talk to the subject matter experts, advisors, and those around the deal table about how to sell at maximum value. Every business will go to sell one day. It's only a matter of when. We're glad you're here. The podcast starts now.
Welcome to another episode of How to Sell Your Business podcast. On today's episode, I got to visit with Scott Ward. Now, Scott is former franchisee of the Played Against Sports franchise, and he was a multi-unit franchisee on top of that. And so I wanted to visit with him, number one, because retail is a terribly complex type business. I mean, it's dependent on obviously customers, but more so on employees. And one of the things that we found in our conversation is the employees became who bought the business. And that's a little bit different from the way a business normally is sold. I mean, it's great to be able to sell to employees if you can do it that way, but it's not very often that you can. Number one, predominantly because of lack of capital. They may just not have that kind of access to capital to buy. And so we had the opportunity to visit through, some of the things that, how did he prepare the business to sell? He went through a couple of brokers that it didn't work out so well, and by aligning with the franchisor, he was able to come alongside of some of the people that he had been raising up through the organization to actually become his buyers. And he wrote a book memorializing these types of adventures, as he put it, adventures in throughout his career. And the book is called Scabs, Scars, and Pots of Gold, True Life Stories from a Successful Franchisee. And so I found his story fascinating, and I'm certain you will too. So let's get on with the show. Okay, good morning. I'm your host, Ed Meisigland. I teach business owners how to build value and maximize the value of their companies when they choose to sell, when they want to sell, how they want to sell, and for what they want to sell as far as value goes. On today's show, I am really excited to welcome Scott Ward. Scott's successfully sold his franchise in the last few years, and he authored a book. And that book is entitled Scab, Scars, and Pots of Gold, The True Stories of a Successful Franchisee. And having done deals for a long time, I can tell you that most businesses don't sell, and a lot of people don't talk about that. But to be successful in selling your business is certainly something to celebrate. So welcome to the show, Scott.
Hey, thank you. So glad to be here, Ed. Appreciate the invite.
Well, I'm happy to have you. I before the show started, I began with a little overview of you, but could you go ahead and kind of cover your background and what you've been doing since you sold the company?
Sure. So, yeah, I spent over 25 years as a multi-store owner of Play It Again Sports Stores. I was one of their initial franchisees back in the 90s, and really grew with them and their kind of learning curve. And it was a great experience. It was a great franchise. Enabled me to do what a lot of franchises do for people. No one in my immediate family had ever owned a business or really completed college. And so there was not a lot of that kitchen table, business talk, a stratagem and of things. So a franchise really helped me with that. And similar things when it came to exit, I didn't know anything really. The franchise, as I was aging through the franchise, they were as well as people came up for resale. So that was actually very helpful. Since I sold the business in the last 4 years or so, I realized, being a community-based guy and a community-based store, I started thinking about what to do next, and I love my community. I realized that property values and property taxes affect the money going into our basic communities. And then I thought, well, wow, commercial real estate is a big portion of that. And if I can help other businesses with their leasing or purchasing of investment and be involved in that same way, that, you know, has provided a real meaningful, you know, second career for me in that sense. And it's been a lot of fun because I'd say I'm one of the few commercial real estate guys now that's actually owned a business. So I think about your cash flow.
You know what? I have to imagine that is a value add because, you know, just being able to relate to the, like you said, the challenges of cash flow and all of the trials and tribulations that go into just existing as a business owner. And I'm certain that your second career is just, you know, it's all about doing just that you can relate. And I'm certain that your clients appreciate that. So I got a bunch of questions. You ready?
Hit me.
All right. So why play it against sports? How did you get into that?
So you mentioned my book, and that's my opening thing in my little book, The Scab, Scars, and Pots of Gold.
Yeah.
I was sitting in when I first came out of school, I was working actually for ad agencies and film production companies, and I was a writer, and I was sitting in my office looking out to the parking lot with the owner pulling in his really nice car, coming in a little late. I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty good. I should own my own business.
Everybody should do it. It's easy.
Yeah. And so a film production company or an ad agency, but there was a little recession that came along, and that's the first thing that budgets were getting cut. Were people to add budgets. And I said, well, I had actually been a customer in this cool little sports store called Play It Again Sports. And we were moving, relocating at the time. My wife got a job offer coming back to Atlanta. And I thought, maybe let me check that out. Because again, I really wanted a community-based business. And I'm kind of a tree hugger, hiker, outdoorsman. And I thought recycling that. What can never go out of business, you know, in a recession? Let's see, sports, sure. Recycling, you know, it was a no brainer. So that was investigating Play It Again Sports.
So that was a conscious decision. I mean, you really, you thought about what was recession proof and how you were going to offset it. Boy, that's some good foresight. Fast forward now, 25 years, how did you know it was the right time to exit?
Well, I'd always had this antsiness to do a little bit of something else. And my kids were early high school, and I started thinking, before they get into college, it might be a good time to transition before we get that heavy college payment. Again, thinking about personal financial cash flow and how, you know, a lot of small to medium-sized businesses, we live almost personally off that business cash flow.
Sure.
So I'm like, okay, let's sell this business. I'm kind of burned out anyway, blah, 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 like we all get. Let's sell it now.
Okay.
And I listed it with a broker, and he created this nice booklet for me, and then I never heard from him again. And I even called, and I was like, well, you're not worth anything. Let me try someone else. So I tried someone else, and they were a little bit better, but they were still not really speaking to me in terms of how can we get your business better to sell and valuations. They just pretty much evaluated it the way it sat. Oh. We're trying to sell it the way it sat. Even selling your home, at least the real estate agent comes in and says, hey, we need to stage this, or you need to clean this up. You know, I found on the business broker side, I wasn't getting that. And then I realized it, and really being a part of a franchise helped too, because I had insight into what others were selling for or not selling for with specific same inventory and margins and sales and comps and all these things. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm just not ready to, you know, a year and a half went by. I was like, I just need to mentally regear myself, that 6-inch difficulty between the years, mentally gear myself up, reboot this business, kick it in the butt, ramp up everything about it, about the EBITDA and everything else, and then we'll sell it right. So that's what I did. And we ramped up, and another, I guess, 6 years went by. The kids were pretty much getting into college or getting out of college. And then I created a 5-year business plan to sell the business.
Good for you. I can tell you, most people don't do that.
Well, this hit me actually after I sold it. I mean, it was, like a lot of us, our heads are in the weeds with our own business. But when I finally came up for air, I realized we business people, we either have this great product and service, right, that we know how to sell it. And we take sales seminars to learn how to sell, yeah, and learn how to market our business for the business that we're selling, the service or the product we're selling. Right. But then when it comes to actually selling our business, we don't do any of that. We just think, oh, you just obviously should know that it's worth something. But you have to make it. So in this 5-year plan, I had a 3-year balance sheet and P&L management program. Okay. I just for 3 years specifically worked on making and squeezing out every bit of profit and showing that profit. And yes, I was going to pay maybe a little more in taxes here, a little more.
Sure.
And then I had a 2-year marketing plan.
Good for you.
And I was able to sell it out of that 2-year marketing plan. I think I sold it in 18, 19 months or something. That's when we finally closed.
So who coached you on the plan, or did you just put it together yourself? And
the franchise helped a little bit, right?
Okay.
You know, at that point, again, that as those years had gone up, we were on our learning curve together. Also, I had been elected to be the on the Franchise Advisory Council for the whole country. The liaison between the franchisor and all the franchisees who are kind of like herding cats sometimes, all very independent-minded. But it was a great spot to be because I, again, had a broad view of the overall system, margins, inventory, all the data goes into to get sliced and diced when you go into selling a business.
There's a lot of scrutiny. I guess I wanted to ask, so the franchise didn't have a resale component to their, it's a large franchise operation.
It's much better now.
Probably because of you.
What you want, you want that in a franchise. You want everybody getting better and learning. At least you feel like your royalties are going somewhere. They're getting better. But, so I knew I needed a booklet. I knew I needed,
promotional material. Sure.
Yeah. And it lays out every single thing about your business, and that's what I would encourage anyone getting ready to sell their business is you need to just be a total open book about every aspect. And that creates trust immediately.
Yeah, and it does, but at the same time, I think that there needs to be the appropriate phasing of information based on the as you've developed that trust.
Yeah, yeah. So one of those was because everybody comes in kicking the can. Well, how much you want for it?
I'll pay you cash. Right.
And so there was you had to submit your financial statements and stuff to be approved through the franchisor. But if you're selling an independent business, I would suggest you have the same exact criteria, work with your business broker, such as yourself or your banker, accountant, attorneys to say, okay, here's the minimum that someone who's realistic about buying your business is going to have in personal assets.
So
you don't go any further.
Yeah. Did you, when you were working or evaluating brokers, how did you select? I mean, you said the first one was a dud. Second one was a step above a dud. How did, I've always been pretty transparent. I think, it's okay. It's better to have no broker than a bad one, because it just, right. it, it, it just locks you in and your hands are tied. So, but what were your steps? And I guess if you could rewind it, what would have been the red flag for you on selecting someone to represent you?
So when I finally did sell it, I did sell it without a broker because at that point the franchise had ramped up their marketing of stores for sale and that type of thing.
Got it.
But, and I really felt good about my package. The second but is part of the data that the franchise was coming up with was 70% of the sales for a store. And this is just unique to this industry that I was in. 70% of the stores would sell to either an employee or a customer.
Really?
So they were like, you just put a big sign on the door that says franchise for sale, owner retiring, transitioning, whatever. And I fully instructed my employees and educated them as to their value to the business and, you know, how, if anyone asked about it, to how to guide them. So then we just put, it was up on the national franchise board, and then it was up on our personal website board. So that's how we started getting those. But to your question, after, you know, being involved with the Georgia Brokers Association a little bit and then seeing the two, I'm also in a succession planning group. Yeah. They, in evaluating a broker, I would say, you know, one is, you know, very clearly, kind of like almost like working with an accountant or an attorney, you set a scope of work and a timeline and some expectations. And then you have something that you can compare maybe apples to apples, like, okay, this broker is going to put together this book, but then what are you going to do with it? Do you have other outside advisors, or are you going to also, in our initial consultation, help me create better value perhaps, or suggest some outside coaching that can be brought in, and a realistic timeline from that broker knowing what it's going to take to sell, because, you know, it's just not going to sell.
Right.
It could take a couple of years or two or 3 years or longer.
Well, believe it or not. I mean, 53% of the time from engagement to selling is half. It's 6 to 12 months. And
okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, then that's a, you know, because you're a good broker.
I don't know about that, but
you know where the people are that are interested in buying.
Well, that's true. But one of the things you said, which is total counterintuitive, is that 70% of the buyer pool for the franchise is coming internally or a customer. And so I guess my question is, how did you communicate to your employees that, hey, I'm selling the business, you're integral to it, and I don't want you to be a flight risk? Because that's really, I mean, from a brokerage environment, that is an absolute no-no. That, you know,
I know.
And it's because that value is stuck in those employees, and boy, letting them know, because, you know, everybody watches the movies, you know, I'm going to get displaced, you know, somebody's going to come in and break it up and sell the pieces. And that, it doesn't happen that way. It never happens that way. The value is in the employees, but boy, I have to imagine that was a real big risk for you to communicate selling.
Maybe it was the communication that I had already been trust. I had already built up with my employees.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't I was coming out of the blue with, you know, communication. Oh, he's never talked to us before about how the store runs. When I first hire employees, I set them up. In fact, I mentored 6 former employees to go on and own their own businesses.
Good for you.
Three of them were played against sports stores. other played against sports stores in the region. Nice. And it was tough on me to lose them.
Sure.
But I want, you know, I told them when I would first bring an employee on, I said, if you're here 3, 4, 5 years from now, you should be getting close to buying your own store.
Good for
you. Or running this one or something. Yeah. You know, I would set them up of my expectation of them.
So, all right. So that's the expectation. So as an employee, typically they don't have a whole lot of funding. I mean, the people, you know, that we have worked with that want to sell to key people, you know, they may be operationally sound, but financially they may be short. So did you bump into that? And if so, how did you get around it?
So I would tell them my story. You know, I didn't have a whole lot of funds getting going, but I had a little bit from, you know, a relative that passed away, not a whole lot, but just enough. But it was, you know, enough that I could put together a plan and then present it to friends and family and say, okay, would you come in with me as an investor or partner on, you know, buying this franchise? And so I just educated them as to how I started. And, you know, in fact, when the employees would come in, again, I kind of go this about employee retention and how do you get better employees? You treat it more like it's an entry level to a larger corporate professional. It's not just this retail, little retail store. This is an entry level position to the sporting goods industry, which was gigantic.
Right? Still is. Yeah.
So, yeah. So whether you are going into engineering, product design, safety, health, healthcare, medical, marketing and media, I would ask my employees, what areas are you interested in growing your career? And I would speak to them as if you're coming on, this is the beginning of a career. So I just spoke to them in more of executive terminology, even if they were part-time employees. And I just think that it would help over time and that built the trust. So when it came time for me to sell, swinging all the way back around to your original question, how did you talk to your employees about this? We were already having conversations about, you know, business plans and business models and what are our sales going to be in. Oh, our margins dropped. Oh, gosh, that's not good. Nobody's getting their bonus. You know, we would really
you were really a transparent owner from the beginning. And I mean, that's the way it sounds. Because I know a lot of employees, a lot of business owners don't want their employees to know the kind of money that the owner's making, because then they're going to squeeze on bonuses and so on and so forth.
Well, to be clear, they didn't know how much I was making. It wasn't that transparent, but I, you know, we just like any sales, you know, we set sales goals, we had margin goals, and then we got rewarded for it.
I get it.
But when we first sat down, I said, you know, I've been doing this 25 years. It's awesome. I love it. But, you know, I'm going to be doing some transitioning. You wouldn't expect me not to. You know?
Yeah.
I expect you to. You know, I just put myself on that level. And I said, you guys are an integral part of this. And I'm going to, you know, we're going to be putting the store up for sale. And you guys need to be on your toes because, you know, the future owner could be coming in and watching, looking around.
And like I said, it's so
fine. I didn't have anybody. They were.
Yeah. So with the franchise, I mean, one of the things that I guess I want to know has to do with like technological obsolescence. Like, for example, you know, do people still go into retail and buy, you know, I know we did, you know, as our kids were growing up, we always seemed to be the last, you know, when the kids picked their sports, we always seemed to be the last people to go to play it against sports and everything had been picked over and I had to go to full retail. But
maybe you could at least trade in a tennis racket for a bat or a bicycle. Yeah.
Does Facebook Marketplace, I know Craigslist has kind of gone by the wayside, but I mean, it seems as though a lot of transactions are now being handled, you know, by the people themselves. And you know, I'm just curious to know whether or not that, how did you guys offset that?
Yeah, as the internet came on, it's like a lot of things in any technology. Mm-hmm. And I almost kind of look at it in a judo versus karate traditional. Mm-hmm. Like karate is kind of like force against force, and judo is like you take force and you go with it. Yeah. So when the internet and all this started coming on and all the price comparison, people would pop up and go, well, Walmart's got it for this, you know, and they put the phone in your face or something. You'd say, that's fantastic. We'll match it. But here was the thing that, you look at the bottom line, it says, they're all triple extra smalls in chartreuse. So if you really want the navy blue one in your size or whatever it is, there was a lot of that happened on the internet, but we've just embraced that technology and used it to our advantage to help us sell our advantage. And the advantages with this particular model of business was that it played again. We gave you a full guarantee and inspection period of like 10 days. So you can take it to the ballpark if it was used, you know, but new, of course, is new. We're going to always, like anybody, give refunds on new stuff if it's defective or whatever. But you can't get that type of easy return. And also create even more of a discount by bringing something in. We would start going through all the things we took and people would start thinking, we didn't think about the horseshoes we've never used in 5 years. We didn't think about those little, you know, things like, we need little kids' bikes and we need baby seats and we need, you know, there were all these things you're sitting around in people's homes. You'd start going through this list and they'd go, we'll, you know, hold that.
Right.
And we'll be right back. So when we were getting price comparison, that particular franchise is unique in that we gave guarantees, we gave customer service, we would match the same price on any given day on the internet. Something could be up or down. You know, sometimes it was more expensive than what we had. And I'd say, hey, should I raise my price for you? And they'd go, no. You know, so we'd have fun with it.
And that's
what we did.
Yeah. It's, you know, and the funny thing is at least the one locally that we have, I mean, it's always busy. It is always busy, and which is great to see. I'm really happy when local businesses are thriving. How did you value your company? You got some consultation from brokers. That's true. But then when you went out to do it yourself, I mean, what did you go to market with? How did you price it? Or were you getting guidance from I know you said that the franchisor provided some, you know, market data on other sales or resales. Did it hold true?
I would look at those. And so I had a rough idea from other market data from other resales around the country based on inventory levels and what our, you know, sales were compared to their yearly sales. But then we had a relationship, the franchise had a relationship with an accounting firm, third party accounting firm, not my accountant, that was knew the business, the resale business and knew our, you know, because there's several different franchise groups, right? There's Once Upon a Child and Plato's Closet and Style Encore and all those others. So this accounting group knew the Windmark branded properties. Because of that, I went to them and I think I paid $1,000 for them to do a complete three or four different styles of valuation on our business, which you're more familiar with those than I am at this point.
But that's okay.
But there's the there's the cash flow model, the EBITDA model, the times whatever.
Sure.
So they did four of those, and it came out, and I had them do that after the 3 years of P&L balance sheet management that I had done. I was ready to go to market now and do my 2 year marketing plan to sell the business. And so that's when I was pulling together the final sales booklet and I wanted their valuation. And they evaluated the business like, I can't remember, it was 12% or maybe a little bit more higher than what I thought it was worth. Because they knew the business. And here's what's interesting is maybe even as a business broker, there might be certain brokers that are better at selling, you know, convenience stores, and some are better at selling restaurants or manufacturing or tech companies. But knowing that that really was worth my $1,000 because it was like,
it was validation.
It was a bunch of money more than what I invested to get those valuations, and the education I got from them was one of those that I even knew about my business, but I didn't know about it to talk about it. And that is bankers look at your inventory as a, if you're an inventory type company, your warehousing, distribution, whatever, you've got inventory as a part of your assets. They look at those at those inventory and say, how old is it? If it's old inventory, it's not worth as much. What are the turns? If you're understanding, you know, if you're a broker or a banker who understands that, that's another thing. Get a banker who understands your type of business. All bankers will say they can, but they can't.
Right.
They're not all the same. They, some of them specialize better in certain industries. But most bankers would look at used inventory and go, oh, we're going to give you like 7 cents on the dollar.
That's where I was going with this. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to admit. Yeah, go ahead.
However, in a used situation, which there are tons of used, I just heard a statistic this week, like 70 or 80% of Americans have purchased or sold something used in the last 5 years through some sort of used website, whether it's these high-end purses and or whether it's whatever it is. So that used inventory on my books, if I'm getting a 60 or 70% margin on used versus 35 to 45% margin on new, which one's more valuable?
Sure. No. And you're exactly right on the banker portion of it, that if they understand, you know, when it goes to underwriting.
Oh my gosh, the light bulbs come on. And then you go, well, if it's not turning fast, it's old inventory. But if it's turning fast, it's just cash flow.
Right.
So there's a subtlety that then you have to educate your buyer.
Yeah, that, no, and I can totally see that. And I did not think about it that way. And like I told you before, I've been doing this 30 years. I never thought of how you just described that type of inventory, that the margin associated with the, I knew it was high, but I looked at it from a profitability standpoint, not necessarily as a collateral value. So I know we're coming a little bit up on time, and I do want to talk about Scab Scars and Pots of Gold.
Yeah.
That's not just a book for franchisees, right? No. That's
my editor said I should niche it, and since I had a franchise, we'll say franchisees. But it's really an Aesop's fable for business. Okay. So with Aesop's fable, you tell a story, and it has a moral to the story. So with Scabs, Scars, and Pots of Gold, I tell my true life stories from beginning to end, how I went through everything all the way up to selling the business. And my stories, I compare to true life examples of enterprise level businesses that did the exact same thing, mistakes I did. And they have roomfuls of MBAs and CFOs and stuff, but they did the same mistakes. And then there's a business lesson moral to the story that resounds with no matter what size your business is. So it's a easy read. It's kind of like say a Chicken Soup for the Soul or Who Moved My Cheese.
So before we conclude, what if I'm a played against sports franchisee, you know, and I am just thinking about just beginning. I know I'm going to have to do something in the next few years. I mean, what are my next steps? What do I, regardless of a broker or whatever, but what do I need to start thinking about? How do I start mentally preparing? I know I can get the book, but before that, because I think the challenge that a lot of business owners face is mentally checking out. As soon as they say I'm selling, I mean, they check out, take a foot off the gas, and that is
hard.
It's hard, right? And so what are your final thoughts on, you know, these are the things you need to be thinking about?
So with any plan, a good, well thought out plan, it's going to have a timeline and expectations and goals to reach at each of those steps throughout your timeline. So when you set out a reasonable timeline for selling your business, that gives you those expectations so that you don't get checked out.
I got it.
Because you say to yourself, okay, well, I'm where I'm said I'm supposed to be. So let's keep at it, because here in another few weeks, I'm going to be at this next step and at the next step. And I can see the light at the end of the tunnel and I'm not checking out. When you don't have any expectations or any, you know, guideposts, then yes, yeah, so easy to check out because you're just spinning. You're like, whatever, you know. So get the proper people. Check in with your accountant, check in with your attorneys, check in with a business broker and interview a couple of different business brokers. And, you know, maybe even your personal wealth management people to help you get that side. And with those, your team. Now you've built a team to run your business. Now you need to build a team to sell your business. So you get the right people and you ask the right questions, and that will help you come up with that proper timeline. And it sounds like a lot, but this could be done in a week. I mean, it really doesn't take that long to pull that team together, because all those people I mentioned, including people like yourself, Ed, want to help. Yeah. And it's just going to, and part of that might even be, you know, you get a coach or a business evaluation person who can come in, and man, there is so much cash that can be squeezed out of everybody's P&L and balance sheet. You don't even realize.
Yeah.
Like in my situation with I now handle leasing for people. Just because your lease is not up for 3 years doesn't mean you can't renegotiate it right now and squeeze some cash flow out of that, put it in towards marketing or whatever it is to then promote within the next 3 years, your EBITDA and your cash flow. And suddenly your business valuation has been, you know, 1.5 more than what it was.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure, since from a timing standpoint, I meant to get to it earlier, but how does franchises like this fare in recessionary times?
The used business does very well.
Yeah.
I mean, it does well in normal. Everybody wants to save money. The nice thing about any used business or clearance or closeout is to make sure you have a good product mix to answer your target audience, target customer's need. So even if you don't have everything they want, they can at least pick it up new or, you know, in some other way.
Got it.
They don't have to go to another location.
Okay.
That's a key.
Yeah. So how do we connect with you?
So I've got a website, Scott Ward, scottvward.com. And then there's, my email address, scottvward4@gmail.
Okay.
The book you can find on Amazon. It's under, you know, entrepreneurship, franchising. Even again, you don't have to have a franchise, I think, to get some fun kicks and giggles out of some of the stories.
Nice.
I use Bobby, who's Talladega Nights. Bobby, he's like Slingshot.
right. Okay. Well, we will make sure that we have all the ways to get in touch with you in the show notes. And, you know, thanks. you know, thank you so much for the time. I mean, I know your experiences and the work that you currently do, as well as, you know, I the big takeaway, you know, just, you know, how you shepherded employees to not only go on, you know, that worked for you, but went on into entrepreneurship. And I think that, you know, that is attestation to you on, you know, just the kind of guy you are and the help that you've given. So thanks so much for your time today. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
I did. It was a pleasure, Ed. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks again. We'll see you around.
Thank you for joining us today on the How to Sell Your Business podcast. If you want more episodes packed with strategies to help sell your business for the maximum value, visit howtosellabusinesspodcast.com for tips and best practices to make your exit life-changing. Better yet, subscribe now so you never miss future episodes. This program is copyrighted by MISO Inc. All rights reserved.